When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. We'll kick things off with that top of the table clash in the Premier League as Liverpool took on Arsenal at Anfield. It'll be Arsenal would start the better of the two sides, opening the scoring after just 4 minutes. Gabriel with a headed goal to make it 1-0. On the 20th minute mark, though, Liverpool felt, and indeed they really should have had a penalty. A handball from Odegaard was somehow missed by the on-field referee and VAR as well. No penalty given there. However, Liverpool would equalise 10 minutes later. A lovely ball from Alexander-Arnold would find Salah, who beat Zinchenko to make it 1-1. Late on, Alexander-Arnold had the opportunity to make it 2-1 to Liverpool. His shot, though, would hit the crossbar. And in the end, the spoils are shared, which is actually good news for Manchester City. Arsenal will be top of Christmas, 1 point clear of Liverpool and Aston Villa. Spurs won earlier in the day, beating Everton. Manchester City, of course, being involved in the Club World Cup. They sit 6 points adrift of Arsenal, but they do have a game in hand. For more on this, Frank Leboeuf, Gab Marcotti with us. We'll hear from the boys in a moment, but sometimes these games can prove to be a little anticlimactic. This was fun.
No, it was a good game. End to end, obviously, in contrast to last weekend when United sat in, which was not a surprise. A little bit lacking quality in the final third. You know, poor from Martinelli, I think, at times from Arsenal's perspective. I thought Gomez got a hold. He struggled when he first came on, and then after that, I thought he did quite well with Saka. Jesus struggled a little bit up there. Obviously, Nunes didn't play.
Mm-hmm. Came on as a sub.
And I think we may see that with Gakpo or Jota when he's fit playing as the false nine. And then it's whether Nunes will play off that left-hand side or maybe on the right side once Salah goes. There was a great battle in the middle of the park. I thought, from Arsenal's perspective, I thought Saliba and Declan Rice were their two best players. I thought Kanate was tremendous when needed for Liverpool. And it was evenly, and I just felt in the second half, maybe at the start, that crowd got behind Liverpool first 10 minutes of the second half and they got a little bit of a head of steam. But Arsenal managed to sort of quell that.
Yeah.
And obviously the big chance came from not brilliant play from Liverpool, but it came from, a comedy of errors on the edge of the box when Martin Odegaard got mixed up with, I don't know who it was, one of his own players. And then we just saw that chance there. But Arsenal lost at Villa last week and have now drawn, and United have drawn two in a row. So as you said, City, without really doing much, and I suppose Aston Villa drawn against Sheffield United yesterday, which was a big surprise. It's been, even though they did win the Club World Cup, which is very prestigious.
Yes.
In terms of the league, it's been a pretty good 7 days for them.
Gab, overall, will Liverpool be the slightly more disappointed of the two sides? They didn't get the win.
I think they will be because of the Odegaard decision, because of Alexander-Arnold hitting crossbar, because ultimately they were at home. However, on the flip side, I've been saying for a while that Liverpool were really far from their ceiling in terms of performance, and yet, you know, they were at or near the top of the league despite not really firing in all cylinders. And I thought this game today, actually, Liverpool played much better than they have in recent weeks. And sure, they dropped 2 points, and it's going to feel like 2 points dropped. But if they can get to click as a team, maybe be less reliant on Mo Salah, especially after he goes away, I think they'll be in a really good place to challenge for the title.
As Craig mentioned, Saliba excellent once again. We know what happened when he went out injured last season, Frank. They're going to wrap him in cotton wool, aren't they?
Yeah, the guy is tremendous. I mean, he's even better than the last season. What I saw today, at some point, even when he had the ball, he was so clever on the French television. He said, well, he should play alongside Odegaard as a number 10 because he knows exactly what to do with the ball. defensively, the guy is so strong. Well, being helped by his teammates as well. I think we cannot forget that the others are working very hard as well, and Gabriel was very good. And the four centre-backs were very good today, I have to say. But I would have to maybe lower a little bit the Liverpool expectations, where maybe they would be frustrated after that game by drawing. The Arsenal has four clear chances in the first 15 minutes. As they would at this score, it would have been completely different. I don't know what would have happened to Liverpool, but I think it's Gabriel Jesus as a big one, and of course you have the goal, but you have so many chances in 15 minutes, which could have changed the game. Yes, of course there is a penalty for me. Yes, there is the TAA chance, but I don't know. Yeah, Arsenal can be also disappointed by their lack of scoring goals in the first 15 minutes.
When we talked about who is most likely to catch City, you've always said Arsenal over Liverpool. Does today confirm that?
I mean, there's not a lot between the sides. I just feel Arsenal are a more solid unit. You know, I think if you were to put Declan Rice in that Liverpool side, make a heck of a difference.
Right.
Hell of a difference in there. But I think they're a little bit more solid. The full-back area is becoming an issue, particularly the left side. The striking area, and there's talk of Ivan Toney and others, but he's not played for months. That's still an issue. But I still think, for me, they're just slightly ahead. And I think when you look
at... Can they win the league with Jesus up top?
Well, I think they can, but it will depend on what Man City do. If Man City keep faltering, they might not need to put together...
Right.
A tremendous run. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? But I think it's a worry for... it's got to be a worry for Mikel Arteta. But one of the things to think about, we've been very critical about David Raya, myself in particular. You go away to Anfield, yeah, we saw that chance from Alexander-Arnold, but think about it. How many saves did he actually have to make at Anfield? I mean, Alisson wasn't exactly busy at the other end. Mm-hmm. I'll give you that. But bear in mind, they're the away side. David Raya wasn't exactly overworked. He was not, right? And I think that tells you how solid generally they are. I mean, there was a couple of hiccups that came their way, and a lot of that was down to Arsenal. The Alexander-Arnold chance was down to Arsenal on the edge of their own box. Declan Rice had to bail Zinchenko out when he tried to Cruyff turn in the first half. So a lot of it, two or three of the incidents were down to them more than what Liverpool created. Both sides have their flaws, but then so does City. So I just think it is very, very tight. And I sincerely hope that Aston Villa can stay in there just to muddy the waters. Mm. So unless City put a run together, which we keep saying, well, they're going to do it because they do it every year. I think it's looking more dubious this year that it's going to be as nailed on as it's been in the past. It's probably as open and it's been as it's been for quite a while. And
that's great. It was great for us, obviously. Gab, did we learn anything today about these two title chances?
Like I said, I think we learned that by the virtue of the fact that I thought Liverpool played better with more confidence than before. I think we know that Liverpool can get substantially better. And I think with Arsenal, what we learned is that they can defend very, very well, be really accomplished. I know we've been critical of their strikers in this game, but I think if Arsenal are to win the title, it's going to be, you know, with games like that. You know, you go away against another title contender and you come away with a point. This helps build confidence. This is still a very young team. I do kind of feel that if Arsenal are going to win the title, they're going to have to get some sort of major value add, either from Gabriel Jesus, maybe starting to become a bigger goal scorer this season, or, you know, maybe Kai Havertz comes good, or Odegaard returns to the level he was at last year. I think something like that probably needs to happen for Arsenal to win the title. But, you know, this is the least experience of these three contenders that we're talking about in terms of having been there and done that. And I think you can only take your hat off to Arteta. This is still a work in progress.
Frank, how much of a definitive statement is this from Liverpool and indeed from Jurgen Klopp that one of the biggest games of the season and you don't start Nunez?
Well, it's a choice. And I mean, Nunez, we mentioned the lack of goal that he has, and I understand that you want to have maybe the players that you think was going to score more than him. I defended him last time when I say I might become the player that we're all expecting him to be, but Reina is not, and the three up front that Klopp put out. I think it was only fine for me, and we could expect something. I'm worried that Salah is going to be missing. Mm. That's, for me, the turning point for Liverpool. But otherwise, you know, Nunez came on. I didn't see anything special. I didn't see a change of maybe rhythm, of more chances for Liverpool. No, I didn't see that. But we're going to see when Salah is going to be out that... is going to be missed, and I think a lot.
Now, if Egypt go all the way through to the AFCON final, let's just take a look at the games that they're going to miss. These are the league games, by the way. Obviously, there's some cup matches thrown in there as well. We're at Bournemouth, home at Chelsea, away at Arsenal, and then at home against Burnley.
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah, it is a little bit of a lottery, isn't it? But I think the definitive, he's going to be missed. There's no argument. You can't spin it any other way.
No. No, you can't. And look, I've always said they have a good stable of attacking players to pick from, but they're going to have to step up. They're going to have to step up. And Diego Jota has to come back. And we know he always gets his quota of goals from and he could end up playing. I think he will end up playing as the false nine ahead of Cody Gakpo, to be honest. And then I think we'll see Nunes getting some game time in the one of the wider positions, and maybe Luis Diaz will switch to the right. We saw a little glimpse of that in the Carabao Cup against West Ham when he started Nunes on the left-hand side. So I think we got a little glimpse into Klopp's mindset that, you know, when Liverpool was successful, Roberto Firmino, you wouldn't call him an out-and-out striker. He's a guy who got his quota of goals, wasn't a natural goal scorer, but was very good with his link-up play, his dropping off and his work rate. And so Klopp likes that kind of player. So that's what we might end up seeing. And I think today what he wanted to do, and I'm only surmising, is that he didn't want somebody just matching up with Gabriel and Saliba in a one-on-one battle because they would probably win.
Right.
That he wanted somebody that was going to try and make them think a little bit differently with their movement by dropping into those holes. It's just the two of them are defending really well. And obviously they got Declan Rice in front. But the answer is, when Salah goes, others will have to step up, and that's when you're looking from goals from the middle of the park as well.
Plenty more questions about this game will be addressed on the latest edition of Extra Time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Manchester United's poor run of form, it continued. The early game on Saturday saw them lose 2-0 to West Ham. And they'd actually have the best chance the first half. Garnacho with the opportunity, one that he couldn't take. And then David Moyes' side would score two late goals, which would see them take all 3 points. And United's horrible season just continues. They've lost 13 in 26 in all competition. That's the most losses before Christmas since 1930. They haven't scored a single goal in all competition in their last four games. That's the worst run since 1992. And they've only scored 18 league goals this campaign. Only Sheffield United have fewer. It's nothing new, is it?
I gave it a lot of credit last week for their stout defence at Anfield, right? A lot of credit. But we did say, one of the things we discussed last week was, OK, that's acceptable at Liverpool for Man United, but it's not acceptable against, outside of the top four, It's not acceptable against the rest. How will United cope when they have to open up, right? We've seen it against Bournemouth and many, many teams this year, where they've opened up and they've been cut open, going back to the first game of the season against Wolves, where they got away with it. And quite frankly, this was appalling. I mean, I don't know where to start. Yeah. And we had some youngsters come in, and that's fine. And the youngsters, for me, mistakes or not, are blameless. He had Amrabat on the bench. He had Reggie on the bench. He had others. He had experienced players on the bench. This is a choice for him. Yes, he's got players out, but it's still a choice. They are absolutely abysmal from top to bottom. I mean, there's no other way to get around it. You know, Rasmus Højlund, you have to feel sorry for him in a sense that, yes, he's not got a Premier League goal, but is there any striker feeding on less scraps than him? Right? I mean, it's borderline unwatchable. And when Erik ten Hag talks about controlling games, anybody who watches a semblance of the Premier League knows that West Ham United generally give up possession to almost every side. That's what they do. So it is no feather in your cap to get 60% possession against West Ham United. You don't have to work for it. That's what they do. That's the game plan. That's their ploy. Now, they've been criticised for it, David Moyes, quite a lot, right? But that's what they do. So for Erik ten Hag to suggest that it's some sort of accomplishment, as he has, because we control the game, well, that's not an argument in this case. So And what I can't get my head around, we have this Jim Ratcliffe investment that just seems to be never-ending.
Yep.
We have so many outside stories of the Sancho and everything else, and what we're seeing on the park is, quite frankly, it's just unacceptable. I don't know how this manager's head cannot roll. I just don't.
What are they doing in the week in training? What are you seeing? What sort of
nothing. Whenever I watch a team, when I watch West Ham, they're working on their team shape.
Yeah.
They're working on counter-attack. And by the way, the West Ham front three would walk into the Man United front three. Paqueta, Kudos, Jarrod Bowen. Mm-hmm. Tells you where they are. All the teams you watch, you look at Villa, high line, taking risks, little bit of a hybrid. Sometimes they can sit back. They really use Ollie Watkins. They've got a hard-working three in midfield. They like the full-backs to get forward. Tottenham in a similar vein under Ange Postecoglou. Roberto De Zerbi comes in. He stamped his authority on Brighton. You know, we know what Arsenal do. We know what Liverpool do. Newcastle are a bit of an anomaly because they're working with, and they have been for a while, an incredible injury list. And I know Man United have got players out. But almost every one of the bigger teams, there is something, you watch them and go, right, I get it, that's what they're trying. With Man United, we still to this day have no idea. They don't squeeze the ball, they don't sit off, they play long balls, they don't try and overplay from the back. I have no idea. I don't, other than there's nobody at Man United can make a decision. So you walk in, you knock in every office, and there's nobody in that office that makes a decision. All round the court, nobody in that office. Other than that, I don't know how this manager is going to survive. Because surely this has to be unacceptable from a football perspective.
You mentioned there the injury list. Let's just remind you who they had missing for this tie. When we talk about teams, as you mentioned, Newcastle, they're struggling with injuries, that they seem to get a pass with it. Why don't Manchester United get the same sort of pass as well?
Because Newcastle have had moments of the season where it's been good. You know, beating PSG. You know, I can't remember, beating Arsenal. Aston Villa 5-1. Yeah, beating Arsenal, knocking Man City out of the Carabao Cup. There's been moments in Newcastle's season with the injuries where you've gone, that was a great game of football. You know, going away to Paris Saint-Germain and basically being outdone by a crazy VAR decision on a handball. So there has been big moments against big teams where Newcastle have had some sublime moments, but it's all cut up to them. You tell me what's Man United. Whenever they cannot beat anybody that's up the top of the league. They can't. They finished bottom of their Champions League group. They got knocked out of the Carabao Cup by Newcastle's B side. Mm-hmm. So there's no. Even when that list was only 50% of that, or even less, they were still as bad. There's been no good. There's been no. Oh, that. Do you remember when they went to Bayern Munich and beat Bayern 4-3? No. Do you remember when they went to
Galatasaray?
No. Do you remember when they went to... No. Do you remember when... No. So there's literally been nothing to hang on to.
And that's the thing, isn't it, Gab? There's nothing to hang your hat on and think there's just a little spark, a little light at the end of the tunnel that maybe we could work on and get this team better.
Yeah, look, while Craig was laying out all his positives, especially that nonsense about... Oh, we control the game against a team that lets you have the ball. I was trying to, I was trying to be positive. I have a positive Saturday. It's Christmas, right? And I thought to myself, well, there's Garnacho's overhead kick, right? That was good. And Maguire had a couple decent games. And
wow, Gavin. No wonder your dog's barking then, at you.
It's hard, right?
Yes.
It's hard to get beyond that. And there's a sense of drift. And the worst thing is, Craig mentioned Jim Ratcliffe there. This is dragging on. And with this dragging on means that nobody has any certainty. Erik ten Hag does not have any certainty about whether he's going to stick around. If he does stick around, he's not going to have any certainty about how the club can operate in January, because there's 50 different people who've been linked with John Murtagh's director of football job. Now this is, looks like it's, well, not doesn't look like, we know it's going to drag on into 2024, once the window's already open, and you feel like that this is going to be a lost season. And I think that makes everybody's job even more difficult and just adds to the frustration. And by the way, with regards to that list you showed of all the injured players who were out, I think what's most frustrating is how many of those guys who are injured now actually played well for Manchester United before getting injured. Other than Lisandro Martinez, I don't think there's too many others. So you can't even really hang your hat on that either.
Frank, what would you like to add? Or do you want the dog to speak for you?
She was barking because my wife is going back home, whatever. But what I want to say is, first, it was one of the worst game for an hour before the West Ham goal, and I agree with Craig. But I have to say that Manchester United has some chances, and Garnacho's opportunity should have gone in, and it would have been maybe a different game. You have some players who pick, maybe we can get out of the criticism, like Garnacho, maybe Luke Shaw as well, who are still keeping the level that they were being drawn by the others. We all know that Ten Hag lost half of the dressing room, like Rashford, for example, is one example out of maybe 10 players. And you feel that it's somewhere already the end of it. I mean, there is a fantastic interview post-game about a lady having fun with Ten Hag, poking him. And him saying, oh, we were dominant, we were good, we were better than West Ham. Which goes what Craig explained, that of course, because West Ham doesn't want the ball. So, of course, you're dominant. But you do nothing. It's over. He lost all credibility on this conference, press conference time. And I think it's over. It's over. He has to go. And somebody has to come. But how are you going to resolve? I mean, I talk a lot about Chelsea and how impossible, I think, right now is to solve all the problems. I think for United, it's exactly the same.
There are player problems, there's no doubt. But I tell you what, there's a bunch of other man. One thing you got to look at as well is to say, look, is he still getting the most out of what he has got? And the answer for me is a categoric no. There's a bunch of other managers, never mind around Europe, right? The Thiago Motas we talked about with Gab, on Friday. And others, a bunch of other managers, up and coming and experienced in Europe. But even in England alone, there's probably seven or eight, I think, would do a better job at Man United than Erik ten Hag. He's struggling. He is out. It looks to me like last year was an anomaly and he's out his depth. I mean, goodness me. Even Sean Dyche is getting Everton playing better football than Man United. They were able to go to Tottenham today. Okay, they lost. They went to Tottenham today and they gave Tottenham a going over for a long part of that game. Playing football.
Yeah.
Right?
But you know, I'm sorry, guys. I don't know if you were told, because I was told that Graham Potter is maybe linked to Manchester United to become the next coach.
Who told you that?
I mean, it was exactly... Huh? What?
Who told you that? The dog?
I was told on the French television
Santa.
That Graham Potter might be
Santa.
The next coach.
He's not going.
And well, you know, it's French television. But I just want to say that if they decided to go for that coach was in the middle of... the same problem with Chelsea and couldn't solve anything there. And you want to pick him? I mean, I don't know. Some people in the office, they have to start working.
This is the point, isn't it? Is there anyone actually around who has the power to sack Ten Hag?
Well, look, the Glazers still own the club and they will own the majority of the club once Jim Ratcliffe comes in and takes over his chunk of the club. The problem is, with the agreement that they have in place, we're led to believe that, you know, Ratcliffe is going to have much more say than his 25% warrants, and he's going to effectively run, or his people are going to run most of the football operations. So what you don't want in this situation, you've agreed a price with a man, you have a deal, and then all of a sudden, you sack Ten Hag now, and then you got to pay him his severance, and you have to pay for a new manager to come in, and then... at that point, Ratcliffe says, sorry, Glazers, I don't want to inherit this situation. I want to make my own choices. So I think that's a difficulty. I think there is definitely a scenario where, obviously everybody knows Graham Potter has been mentioned, although most of the names that have been linked thus far have been director of football types. I think he's going to want to take his time with it. Equally, there's the option of, maybe an interim coach and do a proper coaching search between now and the end of the season. However, remember, they did that last time with Ralf Rangnick, and we know how well that worked out. So it's a really difficult one, and I'd be surprised if they make any sort of major decision until Ratcliffe takes over.
Got Villa next. Oof. Who I know had a disappointing result against Sheffield United, but we know they're a good side. Look, it can't continue. I don't care if there's nobody at that football club. This can't continue. The fans as well. The fans can speak. I mean, it's Manchester United. Four games without a goal. The record we saw in the graphics is dreadful. The football is terrible. The atmosphere at the club is terrible. Mm-hmm. The manager has not been able to handle this particularly unruly group of players. And they are, and the likes of Jadon Sancho, I don't know the whole story here, but how can he sit back and be comfortable with himself if he's available to play and there's a lack of an apology? All these scenarios, but I think it all comes down to the fact that it's not just the results, it's the manner in which they're getting beat in the games. And it's embarrassing.
Of course, throughout the day, we bring you digital shows as well. Craig features heavily on them today. Craig, you're all over the place.
Yeah, well, I need to have a word.
Yeah, I'm
overworked.
Be sure to subscribe to YouTube and our ESPN FC channel. Right then, Spurs Everton, another brilliant game involving Spurs. Yeah. 9 minutes in, Richarlison would score against his old side, and I would suggest the Brazilian quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, he was only scoring with his head up until recently, which was very well documented, but good play down this right side. Brennan Johnson, who had to go off last week, got a clat in the head at his old club, Nottingham Forest, with a really good ball in.
Sean Dyche would not have been particularly happy with his size defending here as Son finds the back of the net.
Right, now at this point, we've seen this Kenny Murphy with Tottenham. They're either going to go on and wallop teams, or B, they're going to start to crumble a little bit.
And it looked like it would be B, especially when Everton thought they'd made it 2-1.
but a foul be awarded against Gomez and goal chalked off.
Well, Andres Aganagay goes off injured. Andre Gomez comes on. He's been out for he's had a lengthy injury period and he was out on loan last year in France. And it is a foul. It is a foul. It's not dissimilar to the Endo one at Crystal Palace recently when Will Hughes fouled him. And I think whatever way you look at it, VAR got that one correct.
Everton, though, would get one back. What a strike this is from Gomez.
Yeah, I thought Gomez was excellent when he came on. Really, really good. His range of passing, his experience. And Everton at this point, I mean, Everton played an unbelievable game down in London.
Dan Juma was causing all sorts of problems at the far side. Thought he'd scored here.
Well, the flag went up for offside, but if it goes in, it will stand, because once they review it, he was on. It comes down, it hits Vicario on the thigh.
It's what a save. What a save it turned out to be. No, the goal line technology would show that it did not cross the line. In the end, it finishes Tottenham 2, Everton 1. I'm slightly concerned for the elder members who follow Spurs, because their poor heart, every game is just stress with Tottenham, isn't it?
And it's not going to change. They lost Romero with it looked like a hamstring, some sort of injury today, went off Eric Dier, come on. Never fills me full of confidence when Dier comes on. That's why he doesn't play, because I don't think he fills Postecoglou with any confidence either. But yeah, they come up against an Everton side that Sean Dyche has got. He's wringing every last bit out of them. I mean, they played good football. You saw the graphic. They created more chances than Tottenham. Vicario had to make save after save, and they were pressuring. And it looked again like Tottenham were going to take the lead again in a game and throw it away.
Yeah,
it did. And I think when Postecoglou reflects on this, he'll think he was pretty lucky. He'll think he was pretty lucky to get the points in this one, but he did. I think they've moved up to fourth with Man City having a game in hand. But you know, when Everton get that 10-point reduction, we'd discuss the relegation threat on here, and I don't think many of us thought they would be, primarily because the others are, some of them have not been very good, albeit Luton and Burnley have started picking points up. But he's done a really, really good job there. It's exciting, and you know I've been on the Postecoglou bandwagon.
Yep.
Today, for me, it was about... Yeah, they were lucky, and it was about how well Everton played.
Yeah, they were. They were fortunate in the end, yeah, Cab?
Well, I mean, fortunate. They also had other chances before. Mm. But I think this is always going to be high risk, the way Postecoglou plays. And, you know, he says he's not going to change that. He thinks that this is the way forward and judge him at the end of the season. And it's brought him a lot of success. And occasionally you will look silly. But I also think we have to give a lot of credit, as Craig said, Sean Dyche. Not my favorite manager, but a really, really good manager. What he's doing with this Everton team in these conditions—they've all drunk the Kool-Aid, and they believe. You know, this is not. If you're Everton, Spurs away is not necessarily a game when you're 2-0 down that you expect to get points out of. But they kept playing, and they looked as if until the very end. You know, they really thought that they were going to get the point, and they nearly did. And I think that's tremendous credit to Sean Dyche.
Meanwhile, it's Kenilworth Road. Luton Town in action against Newcastle. Newcastle poor run of form coming into this tie. And this would...
I didn't see this one. Tell me Trippier ever made a mistake again.
No, this wasn't Trippier's fault. It would see Andros Townsend score here. Nice tribute to Tom Lockyer, of course, their captain, who had a cardiac arrest in the game last weekend. Who'd hold up a shirt to pay tribute to him, and in the end, what a tribute the team overall put in, as it would be Luton Town who would get the victory, who would beat Newcastle. Newcastle side now have only won 1 in 6. Wheels are coming off, Gab.
To some degree, yeah, but I think what we often forget is we all know about their injury record. I think we also need to consider that this is not a team that was accustomed to playing European football, to having that rhythm of, you know, sort of a really big game against a really big opponent, you know, every other week just about in the Champions League. And that's also meant that it's not just the guys we're missing. It also means that you can't rotate. And so the guys who do play look tired and spent. You know, Kieran Trippier being sort of exhibit A, B, and C in this one. I think things are going to settle down. They're going to quiet down. Obviously, they're out of Europe at this stage. And he'll start getting his injured guys back. And I think, you know, we'll see kind of the real Newcastle. Will it be a top four Newcastle? I don't think so this season, but that's not going to take away from the fact that I think this club is still growing.
And it's just the wrong time of the year, isn't it, to start to have this sort of run?
Yeah, and they've just not been able to cope with this mounting injury list to key players, you know, that they've had in the European competition and that group that they were in. So yeah, I mean, they, you know, Carabao Cup as well. They got a quarter final away at Chelsea, which they thought they had in the bag until Kieran Trippier comes off the bench and made a couple of bad mistakes. So I agree with Gab. I think they will get better, and you know, we know they play some good football. I don't think they'll make the top four, and I don't know what the remit is really for Eddie Howe. How much sympathy he's getting from ownership or investors, and whether they understand, and I'm sure they must, or I would like to think they do, that they understand the scenario, or whether it's just a, you need to deliver this or we'll move on. I have no idea how they're going to run that club. And I think from the other end, the Luton win, you know, a month ago I would have said, yeah, we're not, there's no point talking about relegation. It's cut and dried. All sure. These teams are going to go. But, you know, United changed the manager and you know, Chris Wilder, he'll get them organised. They'll start picking some points up. You know, Burnley get a win. Luton have started to show some form. And Forrest have changed their manager.
Yep.
So all of a sudden, it's maybe not quite as cut and dried down there as we thought maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago.
As you mentioned, Forrest, of course, changing their manager. Nuno's first game in charge would end with a 3-2 defeat against Bournemouth. But this would be the moment that would change the game. Remember, VAR will not review a second yellow card. That's exactly what was awarded here. And it's a massive head scratcher.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, the referee was right on the spot there. And in fact, let me tell you this. The Bournemouth player actually, when after Willy Boly plays the ball, the Bournemouth player actually treads on top of his ankle.
Right.
Right? Now the referee has just completely saw something different, right? And obviously VAR can't, as you said, rightly so, cannot go back and intervene on yellow cards. It has to be violent conduct or a direct red. And so therefore Willy Boly has to go, and it's just an awful, awful decision. And when you see it, it's not high, he plays the ball, and as I said, if you watch it closely, the Bournemouth player comes in late and actually catches Willy Boly.
Yeah, but once he shows that yellow, Gab, there's nothing anyone can do.
No, that is one of the foibles of VAR, and it's just something that we have to deal with, because people say we don't want VAR re-refereeing or whatever. What I would say, though, is we often forget about this, and the fourth official and the assistant referee, and like it might not have been the case this time, but you know, they're mic'd into the match official as well. And they're looking at things too. And back in the olden days of pre-VAR, you know, good assistants had this dialogue with the referee where they might have said, look, I saw it really clearly. You're sure about this because it's that. And if you know, since these teams all usually work together, you know, you have this situation of trust where you could avoid situations like this. I think a little bit with VAR, maybe that's gone a little bit out the window.
Frank, it's the first time you've seen that, yeah?
Excuse me, I didn't hear
what
you
said. Was it the first time you've seen that incident?
Yes, the first time, and I don't understand. I mean, I've made thousands of tackles like that in my career. I knew it was another football, I would say, but he plays the ball. It's not an aggression, it's aggressiveness, because he goes for it, he's committed. And sometimes you have injuries by mistake and by misfortune, I would say. And it's what could happen to that player. But there is nothing you can say about Boly willing to do bad thing to the players. He plays the ball, and football is a contact sport. And you have to understand football to understand that there is nothing there. Mm. In this action, precisely for me, there is not even a foul.
Yeah. Here's how this is averted. And I think maybe a slightly more experienced referee, and I think it's slightly going back to what Gab was saying, was that in the VR booth, as soon as that tackle goes in, that would have been spilled back and they would have been watching a replay within 3 or 4 seconds, yeah. Right? If the referee, because once he makes that decision, and he did, it was like he'd made his mind up straight away, the yellow comes out. If he waits 5 or 6 seconds...
Yeah, just take a beat,
If he just takes a breath and goes, right, he can still wish you a yellow card, if he wants. But he then has the VAR or the fourth official, but primarily the VAR in his ear saying, I've looked at it, he's played the ball, he was low. Then he can then do what he likes.
Yeah.
He can give a free kick if he wants, right, even though it's wrong. But he doesn't, once he gives the yellow, once he brings it out and shows it, then that can't be retracted. And I just felt if it had been a Michael Oliver or a more experienced official, he might just have given himself. When you see them do it sometimes,
yes.
You see them go over and they just wait for the players around them and then they give the yellow because they're getting some info in their ears.
There is one more game to be played in the Premier League before Christmas Day, and that is Wolves against Chelsea. Frank believes his old side are going to win, so does Gab. Meanwhile, myself, Craig and Shaka all going for a draw.
To be fair, when the producer, when Pete texts me about this, I was like, oh, God.
Oh.
No, I mean, just mean Chelsea these days.
All right, OK. Well, we will be talking about that game on the
next...
Oh,
are we in tomorrow?
Yes, we are in tomorrow. Craig, we just start the show going, oh, God. Why are we starting with Chelsea?
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Meanwhile, today saw the final game of the calendar year in La Liga.
Thanks, Dan. Atleti rounding out the year in La Liga with a 1-0 win. It's only their second 1-0 win of the season, mind, but a win and a winning end against Sevilla. And it wasn't a great first half, but the second half certainly livened things up. And that's where we are going to pick up the action here. Kike Sanchez-Flores off to a winning start with Sevilla last time out against Granada. This was going to be a tougher test for him against his former club, though. 46th minute, Marcos Llorente had just come on. Little help from Sergio Ramos scores the opener.
Great ball by Kike to pick him out. As you can see, he's clearly onside. And then Llorente is aiming for Morata here. I think Sergio Ramos has to get in the way. Unfortunately, it falls right back into the path of Llorente, who never stopped his run and then kept his head to finish beneath the advancing Dimitrovic.
Another man who came on in the second half. Didn't shower himself in the glory that Marcos Llorente did with Chaylar Söyüncü. He came on for Koke. He was only on the pitch for 4 minutes, Shaka.
And this all comes from the ball being given away in midfield. But then, once Ocampos gets his ball, he's going back towards his own half. I'm really not sure why Söyüncü feels he needs to make a challenge for this. It's awful. From the time the referee had a second look, no surprise to see him dismiss the yellow, that's a red. Starting high up the calf, down the back of the Achilles, you're going to see red every single time.
And an absolute cold shoulder from Diego Simeone, but Atletico Madrid managed to hold on to the 1-0 win. Alexis Nunez was there for the game pitch side today. Afterwards, she caught up with Cesar Azpilicueta.
It's the 12th anniversary of Cholo being manager for this special club. I know you're just starting here as well, but you know exactly what he means. Did you guys have a chat about needing to deliver him this win to celebrate?
Well, I saw a coach at, you know, I met him against for a couple of times. I arrived here last summer. But this someone who always looks at the present and the future, you know, always he refers to to improve. You know, what he has done here in the club has been amazing up to now, and he wants to keep progressing, to keep improving the players, the team, keep achieving the targets, and that's his mindset, always looking forward. So, you know, today was a special day for him, and we are very pleased to get the 3 points for him as well.
Here's how things are looking right now. Atleti level on points with Barcelona and managing to stay within touching distance of the top two, Real Madrid and Girona. Mario Suarez was with us for this game. He played under both coaches, Quique Sanchez Flores as well, who's got Sevilla in 15th as it stands. So let's get his thoughts on what we did just see in this clash and just how much Atleti did need that win, Mario, to round out the year.
It was very important. They get it. Even despite they were not, it was not the best game or the best match for Atletico. The performance was not good or was not the better or the best. But I think despite the way you win, these 3 points were mandatory for Atletico. So I think they are going to go happy to the holidays.
It was the 12th anniversary of Diego Simeone coming in at Atleti. Obviously, you were there back then. What did he do when he first came in? What did he change? What was it like to be there?
He changed everything. He changed the mentality of the club, of the supporters, of all the players. He improved us a lot. He showed us how important is to wear the T-shirt of Atletico de Madrid, to play for Atletico de Madrid, that we must go to every pitch, to every stadium with the mentality of winning. And we did it. We won all the titles possible in Europe except the Champions League that we lost, in my case, the final of Lisbon against Real Madrid, and another one against Real Madrid also in Milan. But he grows, he helps the club to grow, to put it in another dimension with the help of the players also. But I think one of the best news for all the Atletico supporters during all these years is that Simeone is still on the bench.
It really has been a match made in football in heaven, Shaka, but they had to win this today. You see the table and how it looks, because otherwise it would have stayed 10 points between the top two.
Yeah, and listen, while I'm not sure that Girona have the legs to stay there all season long, and whether this Real Madrid team can continue the pace that they started the season, 10 points at this stage of the season is not something Atletico want to be looking forward to making up to, especially this version of Atletico Madrid. I just thought they, more than anybody else sitting in the top end of the table, would be welcoming this break. It's not a long break, but they just look exhausted today against Sevilla. And while, yes, I think this has been probably the most free-flowing, the most attractive Atletico Madrid we've seen under Diego Simeone, this was just hard fought. Thankfully, two substitutes playing their part, one thankfully in Llorente, and then Soyuncu with a ridiculous challenge, but that all of a sudden gave Sevilla the little bit of impetus that they needed. After a good result last week in Quique Sanchez Flores' first game in charge, that they wanted that encouragement. They weren't able to take much from it. But when you look at this over the whole piece, I thought Sevilla put up a better fist of it. But Atletico continue to show that determination and that grit that's become synonymous with Diego Simeone.
Yeah, it sets up 2024 perfectly. We thank Mario Suarez so much for being with us. We'll hear more from him in the new year, and you'll be getting more La Liga on the way in the new year. We've got some great fixtures to welcome it all back. Be sure to be with us for every one of them, as always, in English and in Spanish on ESPN+. Back to you, Dan.
Thanks, Kate. Let's go from Spain to Italy, shall we? A number of big games we saw today in Serie A, including Inter continuing their fine run of form with a 2-0 victory over Lecce. Juve beating Frosinone by 2-1. Meanwhile, Roma beat nine-man Napoli 2-0. So let's just check out what that means in regards to standings in the table. Inter remain 4 points clear of Juventus in second. Milan, of course, with that draw earlier in the week, are now 7 points adrift of Juve in a second. Gab Marcotti is with us. Gab, is a two-horse race, isn't it?
Yeah, although Max Allegri at Juve keeps saying that, well, no, look at my team, blah, blah, blah. Effectively, it is a two-horse race. It's funny with Juve because Allegri traditionally doesn't like playing young players. He likes his veterans. He's had to play young players, and they're responding. Kenan Yıldız, the young sort of Turkish-German striker, scoring an absolute peach of a goal today to open the scoring for Juventus, and they got another one off of Vlahović, who came off the bench, and Allegri saying, oh, maybe being on the bench helped motivate him. Obviously, they need Juve need Vlahović's goals if they're going to challenge for the title. Inter, like you said, I think they're a machine right now. Jan Bissek looking really, really good. Young German at the back as well. That Roma-Napoli game, man, it was old school, grinded out, a lot of fouls. I think it was 12 yellow cards in all, including both for Jose Mourinho and for the master of disaster, Walter Mazzarri. And then in the end, Roma getting it with the goals from Pellegrini and then Lukaku in garbage time after Napoli had been reduced to nine men. Napoli very angry for the red card to Politano in particular. Well, both of them, actually. But the first one where he clearly said something to the referee he shouldn't have after being on the receiving end of a foul.
Osimhen, of course, the other player that got sent off in that tie. But he made headlines today by signing a new contract with Napoli. Gab, this is a surprise, isn't it?
Well, no, they've been negotiating this new deal for a long, long time. Now, it's an interesting contract because it's a contract that, you know, only gives them a one-year extension through 2026. But he does get a big, big bump in wages, effectively doubling his wages to about 10 million euros net, which, if you like to think in pounds per week, as a lot of people do, is around about the 270 grand a week, something like that. But the big news from Napoli's perspective is this gives him another year. It preserves his transfer value. He got a release clause of 130 million euros. So if somebody shows up with the cash, Napoli have to let him go. He gets more money, a little bit of extra security. But then this also means that in a year's time, he'll be entering the final 2 years of his contract and they can sit down and have this conversation all over again.
Gab Marcotti, thank you very much. A lot more from Gab, of course, on the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available twice a week over on our website.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results. Fast. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business with powerful tools like email and SMS marketing, social media posting, and even events management. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. Don't know much about marketing? No sweat. Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. Plus, you can send with confidence, knowing your emails are actually reaching your customers thanks to Constant Contact's best-in-class 97% deliverability rate. Tackle any challenge with Constant Contact's expert live customer support. Plus, everything's backed by their 30-day money-back guarantee. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
That is it. That brings us to the end.
Really looking forward to Chelsea tomorrow. Should be a cracker. It's the only game we've got to talk about.
It's the only thing. And we're recording earlier tomorrow. We're just going to come in. Right, we need two wolves. Chelsea. Bish back.
Come on, Man United. Sack Ten Hag tonight. Give us something to talk about tomorrow.
There we go. Extra time is next. We've got Gab and Frank coming back. Welcome in then to Let's Edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for all of your tweets. Craig is here. We also welcome...
Hit my chair,
I did hit your chair. I also heard Frank's dog through the show barking away.
What kind of dog is it, Frank?
It's a Tuléar Cotton. It's like a Maltese, but it's from Madagascar, so the hair looks like a cotton. It's
so small?
It looks like a Maltese.
Oh, wow.
Small?
It's small, yeah. It's a small, yeah. So the small, you know, it's like a Dan, you know, they like to bark a lot.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much. Gab, you hate dogs, don't you?
You're welcome.
I do not hate dogs. I love dogs, but I have cats. What am I going to say?
Oh, there we go.
You're not allowed dogs in London.
You know, not at all.
You're busy.
You just have cats. Are they allowed out, the cats, Gab? Do they go out and come back in? Or do you have to stay in the house?
No. They go in the back patio and stuff, but yeah, they are generally indoor cats. I do live in central London, so probably not wise to let them out. And also, we have foxes. We have foxes all over the place here in London. So,
The cats nip out, you know, down to Knightsbridge. And...
No, my cat, I grew up with cats, and they would go and go out.
Yeah, but you live in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, I didn't live.
Talking to trees.
Yeah, talking to trees. Craig,
I hate cats. I don't hate cats. I'm not particularly fond of them. I always think a cat is going to snap at you.
Right.
More than
it's
a dog.
It's got more of an edge.
Less, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Less loyalty to a cat as well. Well, you feel that it would just wander off and find a new owner as opposed to a dog who is very loyal. Yeah.
I always feel, and Stevie had used to have this cat.
Yeah, that cat was not right in the head though. It's like its owner.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That cat scared me when I went to his house.
The thing, Craig, you can't stand the fact that you will have to belong to your cat, where a dog belongs to you. That's why you don't accept cats.
Oh, I see. Because you have cats and dogs, Frank. You got a whole zoo there.
Yeah, I had four cats. We only have two left. And I love them because they're so... Yeah, they're so interesting. They do whatever they want, you know. They pretend that they love you, suddenly they hate you. But they have such a big personality. Wow. They have a big personality, and I love those personalities. Yeah,
sounds like my Denise.
I've already got somebody for that.
I don't... Yes, exactly.
I know it's late, so I won't want to keep you guys. Has your cat ever bit you, Frank?
Never. Are you crazy or what? No, never.
No, my cat.
It would be unacceptable. Yeah, exactly.
I don't mean badly, I just mean like a little nip.
Craig, how excited were you that Manchester City won the Club World Cup?
Oh, marvellous.
What was your off that day?
Marvellous. I tell you what, also, I took note of... I see the Urawa Reds continue with their amazing performance.
Oh, they lost, didn't they,
Urawa Reds? Yeah, amazingly.
At least they scored.
They lost. Yeah, they did manage to get a couple.
There we go.
Against Al Ahly. What an amazing competition. It's really so...
Well, don't worry, it's going to be revamped. 2026, 32 teams. It's going to be fun.
In the States.
In the States, 2025, sorry, the World Cup. Oh, that little competition. 2025
in the States.
Yeah.
Marvellous.
That's exciting. Is the blonde dyed hair curse real? Saka was awful today. Was he awful? It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Was his hair blonde today?
I think he dyed his hair.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Not fully.
Rashford. It was Rashford's ginger today.
I think Rashford.
Rashford.
Rashford was worse.
Yeah.
Rashford, he was brown. That was strange.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's like a Stevie colour. Like, why would you want that in your life?
Who am I talking about, hair, you know? But, I didn't like it.
There we go. Gab, did you ever dye your hair back in the day?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. Briefly and very badly.
Beautiful.
Yes, it was before... Before a rugby tournament in college, we all thought it would be cool if we did it and to kind of give us a sense of team, a sense of purpose. And in the end, only some of us did it. Some of us, others chickened out. And it looked really bad. And we all kind of cut our hair really, really short to just wait for it to kind of accelerate the going away.
Romania Euro 96, was that? Yeah, when they all...
No.
Was it
France
98? It was
94. France 98.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that must have been lovely for the commentators.
Commentator's nightmare.
Yeah.
Just as tension seeking.
Well, yes, you did that, obviously, when you got sent off.
But I wasn't attention seeking.
No, not at all.
I dyed the hair before I got sent off.
Yeah, exactly. Just all the attention
on my favourite ground in the world down in Saint-Étienne.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely fantastic.
Lovely. Frank, when you had hair, did you dye it?
No, I didn't have the time for that. I lost my hair. I was 20.
Frank's hair died.
Yeah.
I used to get my tips done.
You know, like your, you know what I used to do?
And like all spiked.
I don't know if you've ever done this. Back in the day, it was the, all the rage to let your hair grow long at the back and get it permed. But just the back.
Right, yeah. So
do you remember that?
The mullet. Yeah, when in the 80s that was, wasn't it? That was kind of
the
Kevin,
mullet.
Kevin
the mullet.
Chrissy Waddle used to do it. Yeah. I had that.
Did you? Yeah.
Fantastic.
You had a perm on your mullet?
Well, I was looking at the back, yeah.
Wow.
Fantastic.
What a sight that must have been. Did you have teeth at that stage?
No, I had the teeth. No, I did actually.
Oh, yeah, you still
I've got teeth now.
Well, yes.
Well, Sergio Ramos. Sergio Ramos is a little bit going like that lately. Yeah, I've seen the haircut that he has.
Yeah.
He has like a mullet haircut with long hair at the back. That's awful, but nobody wants to tell him.
Right, anyway, I believe we've not had many questions so far. Oh, sorry.
You were the one. We started cats and now we've gone to mullets. For Craig, once it was obvious that Manchester United was going to lose, did the producer of the show jump onto the bat phone to get you into the studio in person?
Yeah.
You've been busy. You're on digital today, doing hits.
What happened was we reshuffled everybody's schedule.
Yeah.
To accommodate me coming in.
There we are. Beautiful.
But as I was saying to one of our colleagues earlier, it's getting quite difficult not to be here when Man United lose.
Well, yes.
Because it's...
Yeah, it's the worst record since 1930. Will Nunez ever produce in the final third again, Gab?
Well, I mean, presumably at some point he will, but, you know, I think the reality to him is he brings a lot of other attributes to the table. And, you know, I know he had that... The one breakout season where he scored a ton of goals for Benfica, but I don't know that, you know, he's ever going to become, you know, Erling Haaland in terms of goal scoring, but he doesn't need to be useful. And I think that's what that Klopp's trying to find him spots where he can help without necessarily converting all those chances.
Craig, I noticed you've been tweeting quite a lot lately. What's happened? Is the Christmas spirit getting to you? Will we keep these daily tweets going into 2024?
Unlikely.
Well, there's no golf, that's why. You're bored.
Correct.
Yeah, that's, I think that's the reason.
Once I take the dogs...
yes.
Once I take the dogs out for their long walk in the park...
Yep.
I come back, a bit cold, golf's finished, obviously in Connecticut, set up, Craig.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't like getting involved. I don't get involved in debate with people.
No.
I just can't be bothered.
Right.
But, you know, I don't mind posting the odd picture of a dog or whatever.
Ah, oh, good.
I don't want lengthy.
Gab, you're always saying... Gab, you're always saying you want to see Ten Hag get players in that fit his plans. But how did he manage to go for Antony instead of Kudos?
It's one of the many, many mysteries of this man and Manchester United's recruitment. And I would assume when Sir Jim Ratcliffe did his due diligence of the club, he probably sat down and said, hey, Murta, hey, Eric, come here. How do we end up with all these players? How is it that, you know, most everybody that we signed is either somebody you watched on TV in the Champions League, like Casemiro, somebody you played against last year, like Mason Mount, or a bunch of guys that you know from Holland, and many of them also came through the same agency. How did this all work out? And I think they're going to have to answer that. Do they fit the system? On paper, I think they certainly did early on. You could see what he was trying to do, but then they didn't play like that last year, not in the least. And, you know, and the outcome is what we're seeing now.
I don't know if there's any truth in the story that was flying about. I think yesterday, I believe, Gab will know more than me, about when Jude Bellingham went to Man United's training ground as a 16-year-old. Did you see that story?
Nope.
And allegedly, Sir Alex Ferguson was hoping to schmooze with the player he's represented as his family, sell the club.
Yep.
Well, not sell the club.
Sure, no, but no, sell the club.
Yeah, which Ferguson and David Gill did for many a year to some players that were going to other clubs. You know, and they would hijack moves for big name players, and Ferguson would sell a project and a story and about family, and apparently. He was fuming with, Gab mentioned John Murto, one of the technical people at the club. Basically, Ferguson got a handshake with Bellingham's entourage and him and was ushered out of the room.
Oh, wow.
And basically was
And that was it.
Length. Not that it, I'm not suggesting that he would have gone to Man United. Maybe his mind was made up to go abroad, which seems to be the best move for him, obviously. But I think the fact that if that was true, that not allowing somebody who could quite frankly sell the club to you as a family and maybe just change your mum and dad's mind or whatever, when other people at this club always, it seems, think that they know better, which wouldn't surprise you.
Oh, go on, Cam.
No, I was just trying to think when he was 16, who would have the United manager have been? Would it have been Louis van Gaal at that stage? You know, what? I'm always wondering whether some of the managers who came after, obviously with Davy Moyes, there was no issue, but obviously he only lasted 1 year. I'm just trying to, as I've heard that story too, I was trying to place it in time and wondering whether it might have had to do with whoever the manager was, you know, maybe like to have Sir Alex around just kind of to wave and have pictures, but didn't necessarily want him too closely involved with the team.
Nico,
I don't know, I'm just giving a pass here.
Yeah, I know.
Giving the benefit of the doubt.
Frank, Nico Jackson or Rasmus Højlund, who'll have a better career in the Premier League? Oh, wait, no. Wait, I've missed one. Any advice for Manchester United fans like me? Anything to look forward to the rest of the season, Frank?
Wow.
Us coming in here and bashing them.
It's hard to get a little bit of optimism about Manchester United right now. I think if you love Manchester United, you keep believing that something's going to get better. I think players coming back maybe, but as Craig mentioned during the show, maybe there is a time where the coach has to go, and you have to change something to maybe create a psychological reaction and hope for the best for Manchester United. Because if it doesn't work, and we had Chelsea, often mentioned Chelsea, and all the big mess that they've been in, the best way is to maybe create that psychological reaction and therefore sack Ten Hag.
Nico Jackson or Rasmus Højlund, who'll have a better career in the Premier League, Craig?
I think Rasmus Højlund will, when United or he goes somewhere else and it might not be the Premier League, I think ultimately he's a better player, a better prospect. We're just not seeing that at the moment, and clearly he's obviously struggling in front of goal, but I think there's more to his game, if I'm being honest, than Nico Jackson, so I would say Højlund.
For Frank, have you ever done an acting gig where you had to cry on command, and can we see a demonstration from the acting master?
Yes, I had to do that last year, playing in a movie in the church where I lost my best friend.
Oh.
Yeah, it is, and it's a hard task because you have to use, according to how I learned how to act, you have to use your own feelings.
Yeah.
And most of the time when I do that, I think about my father that I lost almost 20 years ago. And so you go to the process where, you know, I don't blink. I keep my eyes on the camera, for example, and I start thinking about my father, and tears come quite easily. I'm sorry, I won't do that.
No, don't do it now. It's Christmas. It's all right.
It's the way I do it, yeah.
Do we know the way I do it? When somebody sends an email out, the running order, saying it's, we're talking about the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, that's good. That'll bring you to tears.
Or Kylian Mbappe.
Many other.
Kylian Mbappe going to Real Madrid.
Does Gab enjoy an Italian Christmas dinner or a more traditional British version? So in Italy, Gab, would you have it on tomorrow night, Christmas Eve night?
Sorry, I was just trying to. I was just trying to think of the Eagles' last couple of performances and trying to use the Frank LeBlanc.
Yeah, you're rubbish now again.
My eyes are watering a little bit.
Don't blink.
But I know. I'll be practicing, Frank. To answer your question, no, we sort of have we have a hybrid of different sort of traditions. We tend to avoid the British ones because, you know, mince pies and stuff aren't really my thing. But, you know, we do. I think we're going to have a roast tomorrow. And do make a gingerbread house and all that good stuff.
Oh, very. And do you exchange presents with your partner?
Yeah, but we're at the stage where we have little lists, so you kind of know.
Right.
And you kind of pick some items from a list.
Really?
Well, what's on your list, Gab?
On my list, you're not going to laugh. It's a meat thermometer that you can use while cooking to check the doneness of the meat.
Yeah.
The kind that can also go inside the oven, and there's a little wire that comes out.
Oh.
That is top of my list.
I thought it might be like an updated travel jacket with all the zips.
Oh, yes, you need another jacket.
A new version of that jacket.
Gav is synonymous with this jacket. It's got 20 different zips.
I don't trust anybody to buy that.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes. Do Italians... Seriously, Gav, I don't know this.
Where's this going to go?
No. Do Italians synonymous for their, you know, eating the cured meats and the spaghetti and the pasta? Is that what... Would that be a traditional Italian Christmas dinner, or would...
So there's a lot of regional variants in Italy. But no, pasta would not be a traditional dinner, certainly not on Christmas Day. On Christmas Eve, you might have it usually with seafood, depending where you're from. In Italy, I'm from the north of Italy, so we do things a certain way. But normally, on Christmas Day, we would usually have ham or a roast of some kind. We normally have like a million different appetizers again, usually involving a mix of seafood and vegetables, and that would really be the driving force. You know, more than like a big turkey, like you probably had growing up. In Scotland.
Do you think? Oh, hey, you know, nice Italian music as well.
Do you think Grubhub delivering Christmas Day?
I'm sure they will, Craig. I'm sure they'll sort you out. No worries, you can have your pizza.
Oh, yeah, nice pizza.
That's it. Thank you very much, guys. ESPN SE is back. Tomorrow
we'll
be...
Merry Christmas.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Frank. Frank won't be here tomorrow.
He won't be here. He'll have been eaten
You're
by one of his
cats. As well, aren't you? Yeah, okay, lovely, good. And Shaka's here as well.
Is Shaka?
Yeah, no, he's going to do it from home.
Well, I'm doing it from home as well then.
Why?
So do you.
You want to get out?
No, I don't. I'm doing it from home. Decided, right. That's it.
There you are. I'll do it on my own here.